Welcome to Sports Radio New York, a network of New York sports talk shows heard on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Check out New York Hockey Talk with Rob Cole.
Old-time hockey.
New York Baseball Digest with Mike Silva. The Talk of New York Sports with Bill Donahue. The New York Sports Exchange with Eric Merlis and Derek Wozniak. The Starting Nine with Paul Revelin. And Sports Talk 1240 with Mike Carver. Listen every Sunday night at 9 p.m. on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. And be sure to check out all past shows online at sportsradiony.com. From the studios of 1240 AM WGBB. Welcome to New York Baseball Digest with Mike Silva.
And it's another edition of NYBD on WGBB. I'm your host, Mike Silva, here on this Sunday, April the 29th. Hope everybody's doing well here, and hope your Sunday's going well. And we got a big show here for you. Frank Catalanato, former big leaguer. He's got a book coming out called Heart and Hustle, An Unlikely Journey from Little League to the Big Leagues. He's going to be joining us, and he'll be talking a little bit about that book and chatting with me here and chatting a little bit about, you know, his unlikeliest journey to the big leagues since he wasn't a heavily scouted prospect in the Smithtown, Long Island area. And he gets to come on the oldest station on Long Island. So that should be an interesting little scenario we got going on here. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking some Yankees with Jed Weisberger. He was covering the Andy Pettitte rehab start in Trenton earlier this week. Of course, the Yankees called up DJ Mitchell. Looks like David Phelps is going to be going into the rotation. And they're going to be shuffling the rotation a little bit. The Yankees starting pitching has struggled. We know that. And, hey, look, they're 12-9. They don't have as good a record as the Mets. They're a half game behind the Mets, but they have a 12-9 record, and we're here at the end of April. The Yankees are in okay shape. I think they'll work that thing out. And of course, the big news is with Michael Pineda and his season-ending surgery, shoulder surgery, bad, bad news there. And we'll talk a little bit about that, and Brian Cashman, and whether he's going to be on the hot seat. I'll give you a little State of the Union with the Mets. Good win today. Odd game in Colorado, but a good win nonetheless for the New York Mets, and they've been a big surprise here through the first month. Of course, I always have my man Adam behind the glass. He's here with us. If you want to interact on Twitter, at NYBD, Facebook, MSilver177, and of course the website, NYBaseballDigest.com. And joining me now, as I promised to kick it off, he just came out with a book called Heart and Hustle. Former big leaguer. We saw him a little bit a couple of years ago with the Mets. Local guy from Smithtown, Frank Catalanato. And Frank, thanks for joining us here on this late Sunday night. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
So you retired a couple of years ago from baseball. What made you want to take on writing a book? It's not an easy project, Frank. I've talked to a lot of people who have done it, and you got it out here pretty quick, and so far it looks like the response has been good.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It really is. It isn't an easy thing to do, and I never really had aspirations to write a book, but when I retired, a cousin of mine mentioned that I should think about writing one because I had a lot of experiences. I was a student of the game, and I wrote down a lot of what I learned and a lot of experiences, and I kept the book on pitchers, every pitcher I faced, and I detailed everything about the at-bats. So he felt like I would I'd have some good things to write down, and once I started putting paper or pen to paper, I couldn't put the pen down, and it was It's been fun. You know, I was writing for about a year, maybe a year and a half, and it's been a pretty cool process.
Now, that book, is that the same book that we used to see Carlos Delgado use in New York here in the dugout? Did he get that from you, or did you get that from him?
No, you know what? I started doing it when I was in the minor leagues in 1995, I believe, by my coach, Larry Parrish. He had told me to start keeping a book. And coincidentally, I did wind up playing with Carlos Delgado, and he is actually the only other guy that I know in the major leagues that kept the book like I did. So when I got to Toronto, we would always we would compare notes before each game.
It was interesting because you bring that up, and you're obviously using pen to paper, but I've talked to the Bloomberg Sports guys. You know, you have all these technologies in the clubhouse and apps and iPads and spray charts, and hitting is, I think, and I was talking to Kevin Long a little bit ago, and he was talking about how all that stuff makes it even tougher. You see crazy shifts now. You were just doing a basic book. I mean, towards the end of your career, were you using any of the technology to help you along, considering now that you could pretty much track anything in terms of pitches and locations and things like that?
Yeah, you know, I did start using some of the technology out there. You know, we started on the computers. It was so much easier. You know, when I first came up, we would use VHS, you know, VCR type stuff, and fast forwarding and rewinding wasn't very easy. You know, the last couple of years, it was very simple with the computer. You know, you had all your video work on there, and you can skip to wherever you wanted to go, whatever at bat, any series. And then also, you know, with the scouting reports, you could pull them up really quickly on the computer, and you know, with the iPad and the iPod, the iTouch, stuff like that, you could always put the video and all the information on that. So I think that's made it a lot easier, and these guys nowadays are taking advantage of it.
I have with me former big leaguer Frank Catalanato. He has a website, frankcatalanato.com, and a book out, Heart and Hustle. Now, this book is, from what I gather, seeing you interact with the fans on Twitter, and by the way, he's at FCAT27 if you want to follow him on Twitter. This is not just talking about you and your path, but you're trying to send, I guess, a message, it sounds like, to a lot of the young kids, young athletes out there as well. Am I correct?
Yeah, I am. You know, I was never the best player on my teams growing up in Little League and also in high school. And, you know, I worked hard. I was able to get noticed my senior year of high school after the scouts were coming to see three other guys on my team. And, you know, it's an inspirational book with a little bit of instruction in there. And I think it's good not only for the kids, but also for the parents, because I think it's important for the parents to be supportive and encourage the kids. But, you know, it details my story, how I made it to the major leagues. And again, I did not have all the talent in the world. And, you know, it's not like I could just roll out of bed and be a great baseball player. I had to become a student of the game to equal, you know, to even the playing field out a little bit. And I think it's important. The mental part of the game is very important, and it's not taught enough to the kids. So I feel like in my book, it kind of teaches the mental part a little bit.
And that's a great point, because, look, I know scouts, they have their job on the line, and it's so hard to evaluate talent. I think evaluating talent, especially on the baseball diamond, is maybe the toughest scouting job out there. And, look, you're a six-foot guy, 170 pounds. Not that you're not an athlete, but, you know, you're not the first guy they're going to look at. You know, I've talked to agents and scouts who have said, if you're not throwing 95, 96, you know, they don't want to look at you. But the game, and I think you're right, is so much more. And you spent 5 years in the minor leagues, and I've had a chance to talk to guys in the minor leagues, independent leagues. It's such a grind, and I think that especially now we're such in a statistical-based, I guess, mindset, that it's important to bring that back. And I think the mental makeup, sometimes you have to have talent, but that could be the fine line there, that's the difference between you making it and not.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know, it bothers me when these scouts just draft the players that are the biggest, the strongest, and the fastest. You know, a lot of scouts are enamored by some of the tools that they see. But, you know, the big question that I think they don't ask themselves is, can this guy play baseball? And, you know, like you said, there's a lot more than just the physical when it comes to baseball. I think, you know, the mental part really plays a big role. And sometimes people just get too wrapped up in the statistics and you know, the raw skills.
You know, you just mentioned a baseball player. That's what you were. I mean, you played third, second, first. You played both corner outfielders. You DH'd a little bit. And I know you weren't an outfielder by trade when you came up to the big leagues. Now, tell me a little bit about that. Was there any time in the outfield when you first went out there and you're like, oh, please, just don't hit it to me, especially those line drives right at you. You get someone up there smoking one. But what was your best position? And talk about moving around the diamond. You seemed like you'd play anywhere as long as it meant staying in the lineup.
Yeah, that was, you know, I was very fortunate because being able to play a bunch of different positions helped me out. It helped me stay in the league longer and helped me get some at-bats. But, yeah, you know, I came up as a second baseman, and then I had Damian Easley in my way. He had just signed a four-year deal with the Tigers. So I remember Dean Palmer got hurt, and they asked me, Frank, can you play third? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I had never played there before, but I went over there. And then Tony Clark got hurt. And they asked me if I could fill in over there, and you know, of course, I did. I wanted to get in the lineup, but I didn't start playing the outfield until the year 2000. Rusty Greer had gotten hurt, and I had never played in the outfield, and Jerry Nairn was our manager, and he said, Frank, Rusty got hurt, can you play the outfield? And I said, yeah, why not? You know, I can go out there. And he said, all right, well, you're in right field tonight. And I was like, what? So, yeah, that's the first couple of weeks I was pretty nervous out there. You know, it was like a crash course in outfield play. But, you know, to be honest with you, that became my favorite position, the outfield. Left field was where I wound up becoming most comfortable. And I always tell kids now, the more positions you can play, the more valuable you are. So I think it's important to be to be versatile.
Now, I agree, and you're talking about some of the guys you played with in Detroit and Texas. I'm looking at, even in 01 when you hit 330, you know, Pudge Rodriguez was on that team, Palmeiro, A-Rod, Michael Young, Ruben Sierra. Did it help you at all, being that you could just go out, you could fit in, you were a component player, play your game, there was never really any focus on you, but being around those hitters, you know, sometimes pitchers, when they get past those guys, you would think they relax a little bit, and maybe you get a fastball or two groove to you.
Yeah, you know, I think that helped me a lot, especially that year. You know, when you're not the main focus in the lineup, sometimes pitchers can look past you. You know, they're looking on deck and saying, oh, no, I got to face Pudge or Juan Gonzalez or Rafi, something like that. And next thing you know, you get some good pitchers to hit. So I think I took advantage of that. But that was definitely the case at times. I was kind of flying under the radar.
And then you become kind of a story, because now you're fighting for the batting title with Ichiro, and Ichiro's got the Japanese press. Now they're following you. And, I mean, that must have been – I mean, you're only a couple of years in the league, and you know, look, obviously you're having a ton of fun, but that's from a couple of years earlier when you got called up, and I remember reading you saying how nervous you were, your first game in Detroit. Now you're fighting Ichiro for the batting title.
It was exciting, but it was a little a little nerve-wracking, a little stressful, because, you know, the Japanese media, they were at my locker every single day.
And they multiply. I've been to those clubhouses. They hang from the ceiling sometimes. Like, where'd you come from? You know?
It really is unbelievable. And obviously, being in the AL West, the Mariners are in the West too. You know, we played them a lot. So sure enough, whenever we would play Ichiro, these guys, they'd be at my locker. And like you said, there were like hundreds of them all over the place. And, you know, they obviously were rooting for Ichiro, but they wanted to know how I felt about it. So it was a constant reminder day after day. And, sure enough, my last 12 at bats, I went hitless. I was over my last 12, and I think Ichiro probably went like 10 for his last 15. And
were you pressing? Were you pressing the last 12 at bats? Yeah.
Yeah, I was probably pressing a little bit. I kind of felt that pressure, and, you know, I my friends and family and everyone, you know, I was doing all these interviews and people were rooting for me. And I think I pressed a little bit, you know, towards the end there.
And then when you play for Toronto, you're a very popular player in Toronto. I see the Blue Jays fans interact with you on Twitter. You hit for the cycle there, which is ironic. I was thinking about that because Scott Hairston hit for the cycle for the Mets on Friday. And I guess when you go back to that day, that's kind of like, I guess, one of the highlights of your Toronto experience. But were you consciously, as that game went on, were you saying, all right, I got this opportunity here? Were you consciously shooting for a double, a triple? And
no.
You weren't really a home run hitter. So, I mean, you 10, 12 home runs. You could pop one, but.
I actually, I didn't hit for the cycle in Toronto. You might be talking about my six-hit game.
Six-hit game, right. Six-hit game. Sorry.
I hit for the cycle, actually, in AAA Toledo. So that was pretty neat. But yeah, I had the six-hit game in with Toronto when I was in Chicago, and it was awesome. It was a day I'll never forget, because the ball just seemed like a beach ball, and it was, you know, I was so confident up there. I just felt like, you know, I was in the zone, and every pitch that was being thrown up there, I just saw it so good, and I knew I was going to get good wood on the ball.
You know, another cool thing I realized you did, and I know it's always generates debate because of the time of the year it happens is you played it for Italy in the World Baseball Classic, and you actually coached with Mike Piazza, I guess the team, what was it, last year. Talk about that. You were still in your prime. You were still playing. Did you like that experience? Did it interfere with you in the season? I know that from the teams and the, you know, GMs and even the fans, they're all holding their breath that the pitchers aren't going to get screwed up from that. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I loved it. I do think it's a little sketchy with the pitchers, but as far as the position players, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, it was very enjoyable for me being able to represent Italy, and you know what, to be able to leave spring training where it gets a little monotonous and go and play in these games that all of a sudden, you know, are pretty meaningful, and you have a lot of people, a lot of fans in the stands, and you know, I enjoyed playing with the Italian kids because they're so passionate about baseball. And whatever Mike Piazza or myself, whenever we were speaking, we started to draw a crowd. You know, like the guys would come over and kind of listen to us and pick our brains, and they really wanted to learn the game. And it's nice to see that the game in Italy is starting to get better. You know, they don't really play a lot of baseball at a young age, but you know, Alex Liddy, who's a third baseman for the Mariners, he just got called up and last September, and he's an Italian-born player, so we were pretty happy to see that, and I think baseball in Italy is only going to get better.
Yeah, and it gave you a chance to be on the other side, too. So I know you have a family. You've just got out of the game, so obviously you've got other priorities, but is that something that maybe at some point you got in your blood a little bit? Because obviously this book is, you know, there's some aspects of it where you're sharing or coaching in some ways by the written word.
Yeah, you know, I really think I could help out coaching. Right now, you know, I've got four girls at home, and I've been away for a long time. So I right now my focus is on my family. I want to watch my girls grow up, and I love being home. But eventually, once they're grown, I think I'd make a pretty good coach because, again, I think the mental part of the game needs to be taught a little more, and I think that's where my strength is. You know, the mechanics really have to be taught a lot in high school, even in the minor leagues. But once you get to the major leagues, I think the mental part, the coaches that I had in the major leagues, the ones that I like the most were the ones that helped me out with the mental part.
I have with me Frank Catalano, former big league player. Heart and Hustle is a book he just came out with. Now, I know you grew up a Yankees fan. You didn't get a chance to play for the Yankees, but you played for the Mets a couple of months. I know that it was at the tail end of your career. I know that you struggled a little bit. You were a bench player, but was it at least fun to play and put the cherry on top of the career where you grew up?
Yeah, it was a dream come true. It really was. I always had wanted to play in New York, and to be able to play in front of my friends and family, and to sleep in my own bed and commute to work was awesome. You know, I really enjoyed it, and I was really, really thankful that I was able to make the team out of spring training. And I knew that you know, I was on thin ice, and I wasn't getting a lot of playing time. I was just pinch hitting from time to time. So I knew the end was near. And I was just taking in every moment and enjoying it. So it was a thrill to be able to play in New York.
And I think that's one thing, too, the fans forget. I mean, how hard it is at that point in your career because you're struggling between, like what you just talked about, you have your girls at home, you have your wife. You guys are away from home for majority of the year when you really think about it. And was there a moment when you're sitting there and thinking, all right, you're struggling a little bit with the Mets as much as you loved it? Did you have that, is it time to walk away moment? Was that like a stressful time for you? Because now, once you walk away, it's very hard to ratchet it up. I mean, what Andy Pettit's doing, I don't think people realize how difficult it is coming back after sitting out for over a year.
Yeah, that's so difficult what he's doing. Yeah, you know, I had been playing baseball professionally for 19 years since I was 18 and drafted out of high school. So it was a tough moment for me, but I knew that if and when I got released, that it was going to be the end for me. So it was a little frustrating not being able to play more when I was with the Mets. But I knew, you know, that my skills had diminished. I missed my girl terribly, and I knew that it was time to be home.
What about that 20-inning game? That must have been a highlight of your short stint there with the Mets. That was a crazy night. I mean, you got to remember that one. If there's one game you're going to remember, it's that one. And then you hit cleanup. Then you hit cleanup the next day. Do you realize the stir you hitting cleanup the next day caused on talk radio? because Jerry Manuel put. I mean, nothing against you, but you know how it is. You know how fans get with this stuff. Between that was a crazy couple of days.
It was a crazy couple of days. I mean, that 20 inning game was crazy. It just felt like it would never end. And then the next day I came into the clubhouse and I looked at the lineup, and not only was it was my first and only start as a Met, but not only was I playing first base, a position that, you know, I hadn't played one inning in spring training, I was also batting fourth. I thought it was a joke. I had to look at it a couple times, and I think I went to Ed Coleman. I was like, "What's going on? This doesn't make sense." So
there was a lot of things that season that after you left didn't make sense. But we'll just keep it at you for now. I won't put you on the spot on that. But you know what? 20. I mean, did you ever play in a game that long? That was crazy. I didn't think that was ever going to end. Pelfrey coming in, and then they have I think Felipe Lopez was pitching for the Cardinals, and
That's right, Felipe Lopez. Yeah, no, I don't think I've ever been in a game that was that long. You know, I know in Texas we played in like an 18 or 19 inning game. I don't think I've ever played in one in the 20s, though.
Hey, before I let you go, so now you have this book. I know you're doing some contributions over at Mets Blog. Now, after you kind of get out of this game, I know a lot of athletes I've spoken to, they don't really want to watch, or they have a hard time watching the game. Do you stay interactive with the Mets and the Yankees? Are you kind of seeing what's going on? And you played with some of these guys that specifically are on the Mets. What's kind of your involvement with the game, even as a fan or an outside observer?
Yeah, you know, I keep tabs as much as I can. I go on the computer a lot. I follow my friends, my ex-teammates a lot. I don't get to watch full games all the time. You know, I've got my kids, and obviously
you've seen enough games by now.
Yeah.
You don't need to sit through these.
Right.
That's what the fans don't realize. You've had to sit through these, what, how many? You must have played more than a couple thousand games in your career when you start thinking about.
Yeah, I don't even know how many. But you know, sometimes I can watch three or four innings, but, you know, with having the girls, having to put them to bed and dinner and this, that, whatever, it gets a little bit crazy. But I try to watch as much as I can, and if I miss something, I always check out the box scores, on the computer.
Yeah, it was fun when you were here in New York for a little bit. The book is Heart and Hustle. The website's frankcatalanato.com. Give us events. Anything you want the listeners to know about that may be coming up? I know you have your Twitter at fcat27, and fire away.
Yeah, I've got a book signing at the Book Review in Huntington on June 12th, and you can also purchase the book on frankcatalanato.com. Every book that's purchased there will be an autographed copy, and then also on amazon.com you can buy it as well. So I'm looking forward to getting to some of these book signings. I know I'm going to do a book signing in Toronto later in the summer, and hopefully in Texas as well.
And that's they really embraced you up in Toronto. I mean, one last thing, Frank. That's a tough city sometimes. You know, high taxes. A lot of guys don't want to play there, and then it's not what it was in the early 90s, but they really embraced you up there.
Yeah, I love playing there. It's really a good place to play. The fans are were good, and it's nice. Most of my Twitter followers, I think, are from Toronto, so it's nice to know that I have a pretty good following there.
And maybe now, you know, you missed out. Now that they moved the fences in at Citi Field, you might have been able to jack one out of that place. If they
I know, because I'll tell you what, during batting practice, when I was playing with the Mets, I couldn't get one out of there. And we'd go to Philadelphia, and you hit a pop-up, and it goes 10 rows deep. And then you come back home at Citi Field. So I felt bad for those guys, but now that the fences are in,
you could see the difference. I was standing out there. I went on a little press tour, and I got to tell you, I was always like, maybe it's just because, you know, they don't have power hitters. It was absurd. It was absurd.
Really?
Yeah, you could see the absurdity. The other night, David Wright hit one out that definitely would have went off the wall and might have been caught. And it was rocketed, so, you know, the whole thing. But, hey, Frank, you gave us a lot of your time this late hour here on a Sunday. Thanks so much. Good luck with the book, and let's catch up again, okay?
All right. Great talking to you.
That's Frank Catalanato, former big leaguer. And, hey, listen, heart and hustle. You know, no breaks. No breaks. You got an itchy finger out there. We'll get to a lot of things. We're going to give a little State of the Union here. Let's stick on the Mets here because we're going to have Jed Weisberger in a little bit, about 5 minutes or so. We'll take a break in about 5 minutes or so. Then we'll get to Jed. You got an itchy finger. What big sponsor paid money for this show that I'm not seeing any of that you got to get to.
You haven't heard my new advertisement.
What's your new advertisement? You know, it's funny. Before we get to the Mets, so this guy, Adam, while I'm trying to prepare for the show, he's trying to teach me yoga moves, telling me that the station is haunted, giving me his tales of woe about his life. All I want to do is prepare for the interview with Frank Catalanato. I mean, come on, man. You know, so anyway, FrankCatalanato.com, Heart and Hustle is the book. Interesting little concept. Always like catching up with ball players. He gave you a couple little interesting bits there. It was a good segment. But anyway, give you a quick state of the union with the Mets, and obviously 13-9. And I'll stick with the Met theme because Frank was on. 13-9, and you have to be positive about what was going on here. I mean, who would have thought? Even though it was a wild game today, and they should have probably scored about 15 runs, and they only scored 6 when it came down to it, and they almost lost. But you have to be positive, and I know I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I said at the beginning of the year there's 3 things that will determine success of the season, and none of them included wins and losses. It was the development of the young players like Lucas Duda and Daniel Murphy at second and Ike Davis and Ruben Tejada. Josh Tolley you want to throw in there. Now you put Kurt Neuenhuis into the equation since he got called up. Those guys, how they develop, how they could potentially become pieces of a or components of a team that will be a playoff contender. And the other day you saw against the Marlins on that Wednesday, was it Wednesday afternoon game or Thursday afternoon game? I think it's Thursday afternoon game. 9 homegrown players on the field. 9 homegrown players on the field. I think when you take Jason Bay out of the equation over there and you take the pitcher out of the equation, I think you have 7 guys, and I'll include David Wright because he's the second piece of that equation where you were looking to see what he was going to be this year. And so far he's bounced back, and he's back to being a star. Now, 1 month doesn't mean he's back for good. We have to see more of it, and David is a streaky player. We've seen him go on streaks. So there's, you know, there's peaks and valleys that will be there, but this is not the high strikeout frustrating hitter. This is back to the hitter that reminded you of a combination of George Brett and Mike Schmidt. That's the kind of hitter you have right now. So, so far, those 2 things have come up on the affirmative. And if you have both of those things in the affirmative, and if they want to keep David Wright, they have a contract for next year. They just get the option, so he ain't going anywhere. That is a huge, huge foundation offensively. I mean, 7 players you could have, and I'm excited about those guys. Neuenhuis has shown a lot. Duda has finally, as bats come to life. And I know I wrote about sending Ike down to the minor leagues and all that thing. And let me tell you something. When you're hitting 132, that has to be on the table. And that's a last resort. He looked really good today. The process is back. Maybe sitting him against the lefty on Friday and had Zach Lutz start at first, maybe that woke him up a little bit. Maybe he just needed a day to sit back. And if you go to Colorado and if you go to Houston and you're not going to get healthy with your batting average, there might not be a ballpark in the world that you'll get healthy with your batting average. So perfect road trip came up for him. Ike looked a lot better, went the other way in extra innings for the game-winning hit. Should have had another hit on a line drive, I guess it was in the 9th inning, a scorcher that Scudero caught. The process was good. The process has been good with all these guys. You know, Tolley struggled at times a little defensively, but you know, he had the home run today. He's looked good for the most part this year at the plate. So you have those 2 things going in the affirmative. Now, the young pitchers in the minor leagues specifically, and if you want to add guys like Jonathan Neese and not so much Dylan G, because I think he's more of a back end rotation starter, not an impact pitcher, but Jonathan Neese has looked really good. Familia and Harvey at AAA have not looked good. Zach Wheeler, I think he's pitching tonight, and I think he did pitch tonight. I think he pitched 5 innings, gave 1 run, something around those something in that vicinity. But he's got a 1.75 ERA, so I'm looking forward. Maybe he'll get a start when the B-Mets come to Trenton. Guys, you have like Colin McHugh, who's pitching pretty well. There's a Greg Peavy, he struggled the other day. They have some arms, and if you go even further down, they have some arms. You got some bullpen arms like a Jack Leatherstash, or Sleatherstitch, I don't know how you say it. I think Leatherstash is how you say his name, and Josh Edgen, who we saw in spring training. The Mets have talent. Now, there's questions about how they can potentially complement that talent and keep that talent because of the ownership financial situation. Obviously, that's a huge question that will continue to hang over this team until the Mets show that they can behave like a big market team. And part of that is going out and re-signing David Wright. And I know everybody keeps talking about how they didn't make an offer to Jose Reyes. You know what? If you're not tired of Jose Reyes, you should be after this week. Because the propaganda that came out of the Reyes side. Oh, they didn't make me an offer. You know what? Maybe the Mets didn't want you. Maybe the Mets wanted you at their price, because I'll tell you what, so what if they wanted you at their price? There were 28 other teams that wanted you at their price. There were 28 other teams that were not interested in giving you $106 million and going above 5 years for your services. And right now, the biggest disappointment from that I have, because I think Ruben Tejada has shown to be a very solid shortstop, a different type of player, the biggest disappointment I have from that whole situation is not so much that Reyes is wearing a Miami Marlin uniform, but that they did not reinvest the $10 million that came off the books from him last year back into some depth on the team, and I think that's the biggest concern. You lost Pelfrey. Pelfrey's out for the year. You lost Pelfrey. So now you got Schwinden in the rotation, who jury's out. Let's give him a break. It's Colorado. But, you know, you start to go to Miguel Batista, you know, maybe Jeremy Hefner. These are the guys I talked about in spring training that are a problem. And you wanted to have your mulligan card for Santana. And, I mean, I'm just shocked at what Santana's been able to give you. Shocked. Never would have thought about it. Never would have thought that he could at this point pitch like that. And then you got Chris Young. So you're kind of working on the scrap PP, and you're piecing together that fifth spot. With Pelfrey, you had guys, every starter could give you six innings, three runs, or better. I don't know if you can say that now with Schwinden in the five hole. And when you have Miguel Batista starting back into the doubleheader, that's a problem. And if you get into a stretch where there's rainouts and stuff, this is where this team would struggle. This is why when you start to get excited and say, well, maybe this is a team that can compete for the second wild card, keep thinking about the depth. Offensively, I think they're going to be fine. I mean, they're going to be a little streaky sometimes, but they're going to be fine. The bullpen will drive you a little nuts. Francisco's going to drive you nuts. Rouser's going to drive you nuts. Bullpens always drive every team nuts because you don't know what you're going to get from them, sometimes from game to game, no matter how good. It's a better bullpen than I think you had last year. Certainly there's better talent out there. But the starting pitching is a problem, and I don't know if they're going to have the want or ability. And, hey, if Santana continues to pitch elite, I don't know if any team would trade for him and absorb the rest of the contract, because it's a lot of money when you're looking at upwards of $25, $26 million. But if they want to, you have to seriously consider it, even if they're in the race, because this would be a huge angel loan, so to speak. Well, not an angel loan, but a huge monkey off the back of Sandy Alderson getting $25 million off that payroll, getting that money freed up for flexibility for a guy that could blow out at any time. So that could be a question that we're facing later on this very same program later on. But, look, a lot of positive stuff for the Mets. Two out of the three things we could judge so far pointing in the right direction, young pitchers. I think that's an end-of-the-year type of scenario. We'll probably have to do some kind of update on those young pitchers at some point as we get into the late May, early June. I still think it's too early to kind of break down a lot of what's going on. But it would be good for us to do that. And obviously a lot to be excited about. They have a better record than the Yankees. Who would have thought that? And I'll tell you what, this is a team that's going to continue to be competitive. I think it's going to be a fun year. I don't know if it's going to end anywhere near close to any kind of competitive postseason thoughts when you hit July and August. But if they're competitive, and you know what? Nobody's telling them, everyone's telling them they're not good enough. But someone forgot to remind them they're supposed to play along with this. They're not playing along with this whole thing. So, anyway, that's my Mets State of the Union as we hit the end of April. All right, Adam, how about we do a quick, can we do 2 minutes? And then let's get Jed on and we'll talk Yankees, because I want to get to the Yankees as we wrap up the show here. We'll be right back.
Do you dream of one day owning your own home? American Bank is helping people turn their dreams into reality. For fast approvals, low interest rates, and a chance to work with a real mortgage banker, please ask us about our lender-paid closing cost loan or how you can save money monthly on your current mortgage. For more information, please call 855-47-LOANS. Here at American Bank, customer service is our only priority. American Bank. Bankers with vision, helping people with dreams. Call today for your free home mortgage evaluation at 855-47-LOANS. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
Sports Radio New York, a network of New York sports talk shows heard on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Check out New York Hockey Talk with Rob Cole.
All-time hockey.
New York Baseball Digest with Mike Silva. The Talk of New York Sports with Bill Donahue. The New York Sports Exchange with Eric Mollis and Derek Wozniak. The Starting Nine with Paul Revelin. And Sports Talk 1240 with Mike Carver. Listen every Sunday night at 9 p.m. on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. And be sure to check out all past shows online at sportsradiony.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip change, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
You're listening to Sports Radio New York on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to New York Baseball Digest with Mike Silva.
We are back. Sometimes you don't know what the microphones around here. They don't come back, so I have to kind of test them a little bit. But anyway, we are back, and we have, we still got quite a bit of time here. And I, you know, like I said, I had a little Frank Catalanato. Put him a little bit on the spot there when he was saying how he was shocked that he was hitting cleanup the day after the 20-inning game a couple of years ago. Jerry Manuel was the manager. I didn't want to get him to say that he was asking Ed Coleman. I mean, think about this. Catalanato comes to the ballpark. He's batting cleanup the day after the 20-inning game, and he's got to go to Ed Coleman of WFAN to see if it's a joke. Where's your manager? You got to love Jerry Manuel. I'll tell you, Jerry was good for that half a season in 2008 when the Mets went on their little run after Willie was fired. But it progressively got worse in 09, and it got very strange, especially late in 10. It got very strange. But anyway, interesting that Catalanato said that. And then I said there was a lot of things that after you left that didn't make sense, specifically bullpen moves. But we'll leave it at that. Well, let's move to the Yankees. And joining me is NYBD contributor, and he also contributes over at MLB.com. He was kind enough while he was down in Trenton for MLB.com to cover Andy Pettit's rehab start on Wednesday night while I was at Citi Field watching Jose Reyes's not-so-triumphant return to the place where he started his career. And he's joining us now. We're going to talk a little Yankees, a little Andy Pettit, Yankee starting rotation. Of course, the big story this week, Michael Pineda and his bum shoulder. Jed Weisberger. Jed, it's been a while. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. You know, it's really an honor following Catalanato, I'll tell you. I remember back in 1994 when the Trenton Thunder, the first year, was a Detroit affiliate, and Catalanato was ripping it up in Class A that season.
Underrated player. When you start to look at his career, not only was he very – listen, he did a great – you could not have asked for more financially if you start looking at some of the salaries he generated over a career. But from a player standpoint, he was a guy that fit really well into a lineup, hit .330 that one year in Texas, and good guy and a solid ball player, very underrated.
Absolutely. And I kept hoping he'd be called up from A to double A that first year with the Thunder, which ended up 55-85. Was not a good first year, but he didn't get to double A, I guess, till the year after, when they were in Jacksonville. So, but he went on, of course, to have a great career after 93 and 94. And exactly, Mike, I agree with that. Frankie the Cat was for the bang for the buck. There weren't too many better. Now we'll have to see if Andy Pettit for $1 million is going to give him the bang for the buck this year.
Yeah, and he even said before, and what Andy Pettit is doing, this is so underrated. And I get into arguments on Twitter with a lot of the those that are smarter than me that run these statistical based sites or network sponsored blogs over there, and they say, hey, there's no evidence that Pettit being off, if that's the only thing that you're worried about, then, he'll just work at the Kings. He's going to be 40 years old. He's going to be coming back. Now, you talked to him the other day on Wednesday. You talked to Brian Cashman, and it was a rough day there. You had a double whammy. You had Pettit coming back, showing that he's not quite ready, not throwing very hard, throwing 86, 87, 88. And then on the heels of Michael Pineda, it being reported he has a labrum issue, which is never good when you have a shoulder. Talk a little bit about Pettit. Talk a little bit about Cashman and his where he's at with that, and maybe educate us a little bit, because everyone seems to think that this kid might have been damaged goods coming over.
Okay, well, first of all, about Andy, you know, talking to him after, he thought he made it progress. And if you read my Yankees.com story, that's the way I did write it, my MLB.com story. But, you know, he knows that he's not there yet, Mike. The thing is, as he said, the most important thing is his body has to get used to, you know, this again after not pitching for being off for 16 months. And, you know, and he even mentioned maybe because he's going to be 40 in June, it's a little slower than he thought. But Andy is going to get there. It's just his stamina and, you know, his strength and, you know, and his control. His control isn't bad, but, you know, and his command isn't bad, although he wasn't happy with it the other night. He made a few mistakes and left a few things out over the plate that he didn't want to. You know, and some guys on Erie's team just jumped all over him. I mean, most double-A guys can hit fastballs, and they can hit curveballs if they stay with them. But, you know, he talked about, I guess the most important comment he made was, he said, like, in when he got up to, like, 80 pitches, he said, I didn't feel I had the strength to pop one in there. You know, and he says, I got to do that when I'm at 80, 85, or in a big league game at 100 pitches. And because of that, he is definitely two or three starts away. Cashman mentioned he's probably between the quarter pole and the halfway point in spring training. And I would agree with that as far as Andy's concerned. And as I wrote, and I wrote for you also, Andy is going to come back and he's going to help. But you can't look for him to be the savior of the rotation. I think he could definitely get in there, win 10 or 12 games if things go well. But, you know, he's got to be ready. And, you know, as Brian Cashman said, you know, when his pitches are ready and his pitch count, his strength is ready, his stamina is ready, then he'll be slotted into the rotation. But he's not there yet, believe me.
No, not at all. And that's the thing I think that a lot of the fans have to realize. Now, you're sliding Phelps. We'll get to Pineda in a minute. But you're sliding Phelps into the rotation now. Phil Hughes, who everybody's ready to run out of town, like, you know, on a stake here, with fire and, you know, run a stake, he's going to be in the rotation for a little bit. But, I mean, would it surprise you if Pettit came in and was league average for most of the summer, and then the real value of Pettit is, can he get his legs under, can he give you enough to be a back-end rotation starter, have some good outings, have some bad outings, but then really be that guy that you could turn to in a postseason series? Is that, you think, best case scenario, what you could get from Andy Pettit, knowing realistically his age, knowing the time off? Or am I underselling him here?
Mike, I would have to agree with that. I don't think you're really underselling him. I mean, if he ends up being a 4 or 5 starter for the Yankees, and, you know, he's the guy that you can count on to be the third starter in postseason, I think everybody in the Yankees organization would be quite satisfied with that. I mean, I can't see, you know, I mean, we'll see what happens, you know, in the next few weeks. But the way he looked in Trenton, and I love Andy Pettit, you know, and I've covered enough of him, a lot of them, but he does not look anywhere near a number two starter. And even Brian Cashman said if every starter in the rotation was suddenly hurt or unavailable, he would not slide Andy in right now. I mean, I think I agree with you. I think a back-of-the-rotation starter and the guy you can depend on to be the third starter in the playoffs is the most we can expect out of him this year, to be honest with you.
If taking Pettit out of the equation for a minute, you're confident that that Phelps could give you some very solid performances in the five-hole? And I think, you know, because we've talked off-air, there's this idea that Phil Hughes is, you know, days away from being exiled, you know, to the bullpen or out of here, and you told me off the air, not going to happen.
I think Phil Hughes, given his age and, you know, being the number one draft pick of the past, having come back from injury, I think they will give Phil Hughes until at least Memorial Day to see what he can do. That's just my opinion and talking to a few people, but I can't see him being exiled that quickly.
Once he goes to the bullpen, he's done. Like, see, the thing is, I think once you make that transition back to the bullpen, he's not coming back to the rotation. I think that's the key point. Am I right?
I would probably agree with that. And I'll tell you one thing about Phil Hughes. If he cannot be a starter, I would have no problem putting him in the bullpen because he was very successful out of the bullpen. And if that's where his role turns out to be, that's fine. I mean, as far as David Phelps is concerned, Mike, remember one thing about him. I've seen David Phelps for the last 3 years, and all he does is throw strikes. All he does is win. All he does is, hit the corners of the plate and, hit both sides of the plate. And he can rear back and hit about 92, 93 when he has to. And he's kind of fearless. Now, the one thing, I think it started against Kansas City, which is what the spot started to be before him. The only thing about David Phelps in his, I think he's pitched 17 in the third innings. The only thing I would have caution with, he got hit fairly hard against Boston and he got hit fairly hard against Texas. And those are two really, obviously, strong lineups, especially, he pitched against them in their home parks, not Yankee Stadium. But I think Phelps would be fine with a spot start. He has won everywhere he's been. And you have to remember, guys come up through the minors together. And in a sense, it wouldn't be Kansas City because he's never faced any Royals guys in the minors. But, most guys, when they come up and they face teams, Boston is in the Eastern League and it's in the International League and so is Cleveland, and so are a bunch of the other teams. You're coming up with the same guys, like Kipnis is having a nice start. He got up with Cleveland. I mean, Phelps faced him in the minor leagues, and things like that. He pitched against Clay Buchholz in the minor leagues and things like that. And you're basically competing with the same guys. You just happen to be one of the group of guys that performed well enough to make it to the major leagues. So in a spot start, I think he'll be fine. As far as Hughes, if he ends up getting exiled to the bullpen, I think he'll still be useful to the Yankees there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's amazing how you've heard Benuelos Betances, rightfully so, and you've heard all the hype of these prospects. And David Phelps, and you wrote about him and you've talked about him, and even other guys on the site, like the guy like Joe Del Grippo, all that kid did since he came out of Notre Dame was go and win at every level. And he never really was recognized, and with the hysteria and the media specialization now with the whole internet and prospects becoming a big story from the day they drafted, he flew under the radar, and it goes to show you that it's not just about, and Catalanano was talking about this, these skills or these things like, radar gun readings and all this saber scouting. A guy who knows how to pitch, who knows how to work his way up through a system, knows how to win, and knows how to master the mental side of pitching as well as the physical. Those are the guys that are going to be successful, and I think Phelps is a guy that falls into that.
Exactly. I mean, a perfect example, Mike, is the guy fellow pitching against the Yankees yesterday. Smiley just got the Double-A the second half of the season last year. Pitched well for Erie. But what a lot of scouts noticed with him, even last year, I didn't write too much about him at the time, because I really want to follow the Troy organization, closely. That, he is able to hit corners, he's able to change speeds, and he developed a cutter. And it was the first time the Yankees saw him yesterday. And, that was, a good day for, Jim Leland, one of his young kids, beat the Yankees. Phelps, I would think, against Kansas City would probably have almost the same kind of pitcher. Mentally, he's tough. He has an idea what he wants to do, and he goes out and does it. And, his command is at the major league level now, and Betances and Bañuelos are a little bit behind, in command. DJ Mitchell has added a nice changeup to his sinker and his fastball, which he pounds to the lower part of the plate, and that's why DJ Mitchell got a call up today. And with DJ there, that opens the door for Phelps, and we'll see what happens. But the Yankees are going to have to make some moves with some of these guys.
You think Garcia's done, and could we see him being designated or released at some point?
The thing with Garcia, I have to respect, I didn't see Garcia in spring training, but I have to respect Joe Girardi's comments saying, it was there in spring training and it's not there now. That's number one. Number two, even in his good years in Seattle in the beginning, Freddie was a notoriously slow starter. So we'll see what happens. I think it's good for Phelps to make the next start and let Larry Rothschild maybe work with Garcia and see what's going on. I think Freddie will be given another shot to see if everything is there, because it was there in spring training. There's no reason why it shouldn't be there now, unless suddenly his arm's shot. And I think they give him another shot, you know, given that he had a good spring training. And if it turns out that the stuff, quote unquote, is still not there in a start he gets later, I think then he is done, to be honest with you.
When it comes, and I want to get to the Pineda thing. So two things on that. Pineda, based on the what you've, you know, you talk to people and you've been following this. Is there some kind of reason to believe that he was damaged goods coming over, and now you've heard the fans for not the first time, but for probably the first time in a while, question Brian Cashman and wonder, well, if George was around, was this a fireable offense? And they're starting to analyze specifically his pitching moves, guys like Weaver and Keigawa and Carl Pavano, how they haven't worked out. I think the process was good on this. I don't think Montero, and even Bill Maddon wrote about it today, Montero wasn't in their plans as anything more than a part-time DH. And when you have a chance to get a top-of-the-rotation starter, you do it. I think Montero's been one of the more overrated prospects that we've talked about. But I think the process was there. Kid got hurt. Probably didn't help that you had to have him prove himself in spring training, and he amped it up and he hurt his shoulder. Or do you think that maybe he came here with some fraying and some damage?
Well, Mike, you know, he didn't come here with damage because, you know, he was given an MRI by the Yankees before spring training, and it was clean. So he did not come here damaged. I mean, that's the first point. If somebody wants to not believe that, that's their prerogative, but the evidence is there. The MRI in spring training was clean. Now, on point B, which you make, which is very good, he came into camp 20 pounds overweight, and his velocity was down, and he probably thought he had to impress. Now, if he hurt his shoulder in spring training, given the MRI is clean, before spring training, at the beginning of spring training, the evidence is he probably did hurt his labrum in spring training. And what's unusual about his injury is it's in the front of the labrum. It's not in the side or in the back where you usually get it. It's in the front, and the operation he's undergoing is they're not opening him up even, Mike. What they're doing is they're going to use the scope on this. Now, the thing that Mr. Pineda has to do, he's not been known as a very hard worker at times. He's going to learn he's going to have to work hard to come back from this. I mean, guys like Chris Carpenter have come back, and they're terrific. So I see no reason why Pineda can't recover and come back from this. But he's going to have to work hard, and he's going to have to, you know, I think he'll be a productive pitcher for the Yankees. And to be honest, you know, another thing, too, I mean, you know, I don't think under George this would have been a fireable offense. I mean, I think the kid came over, the MRI was clean, there was no problem, and the kid just got hurt in spring training. It happens.
Yeah. I mean, you surprised at some of the – and you even said on the site, look, he's not going anywhere with Cashman. Are you surprised? And, look, majority of the people in the vote, and it's not scientific, majority of the people are fans of our site, well more than 60% last time I looked, are okay with Cashman. They don't want to see him fired. But there's still a third of the people that believe it's time to go. And he's been a guy that's gotten criticism, and he's a guy that's had a battle, big market guy, spends money. And some of the moves he's made over the last couple of years haven't worked out. But there's a lot of pitching depth that I think, especially when you see Phelps and Mitchell, and I think this is where you're going to see with his focus on the farm system. You've talked about this on this show starting in 2005. This is where, you know, the Yankees are going to finally get the payoff. They're not going to have to run around and look for some veteran in July. They have guys. They have them now.
Well, first of all, I mean, fans can say whatever they want. I mean, you know, there was one post on your site, I mean, where somebody pointed out that Brett Gardner and Robinson Cano and people like that weren't even mentioned, which is true. I mean, you look at how many homegrown players are there right now. Eduardo Nunez is another one. And I, you know, like I said, Brian is not perfect as GM. I mean, he deserves to be criticized at times. I mean, I'm never perfect in any job I do, neither are you, neither is Brian. And that's the way it goes. But as far as throwing him out the door, as you just mentioned, this general manager is responsible for the Yankees farm system from being an afterthought to being a top five farm system in baseball. And, you know, as long as this general manager is in control with the Yankees, farm system will continue to be strong. You know, and not every prospect is going to become a pitcher. And also, I see nothing wrong with the Yankees' development of pitchers, you know, and things like that. And I've watched these guys through Class A, through Double A, somewhat in Triple A. And you know, at times guys get hurt. At times guys like Manny Bañuelos lose their command. I mean, it's the way it goes. I mean, CC Sabathia had a couple starts where he lost his command. But, you know, the Yankees pitching will be in good shape. I mean, they've gotten a couple bad breaks with the rotation. I mean, you know, Hiroki Kuroda had a bad, you know, had two bad starts. Hughes has had a couple bad starts. CC had a couple bad starts. He pitched great today. Ivan Nova had a bad start the other night. I mean, it happens, especially early in the season. But, you know, I look at the calendar, Mike. It's the end of April, and the teams have played 20 or 22 out of 162 games. This is not the time to panic about anything.
Hey, you got 30 seconds. What do you got coming up this week?
We're going to watch some things going on. I'll give you a form report. Jose Campos had a tough night the other night. It happens. Dellin Betances had a great night. We're going to focus on Mr. Betances and, you know, how he got things together the other night. And as far as Andy Pettit is concerned, he's going to start in Tampa tomorrow night. And then his third start, from what I understand, in the minors is supposed to be in Trenton next Saturday, May 5th. If that's the case, we'll be on duty for everybody that night as well. And I hope to see Pettit, I hope to see Andy advanced at that time over what I saw last week.
Well, listen, it's a good segment, Jed. Always a pleasure talking to you. Great info. Let's catch up, and I'll probably see you down in Trenton, okay?
Anytime, Mike. Thanks for having me.
That's Jed Weisberger, MLB.com, and contributor at NYBaseballDigest.com. Well, pretty packed show. Pretty packed show. How much time we got left, buddy? We'll wrap it up. Nah, let's just wrap it up. I mean, he wants me to, you know, I love people on this station. They like to think, I have 2 minutes. I got to finish 2 minutes. Well, hey, great show. Have a great time there. Of course, my man Adam behind the glass, I want to thank him. Want to thank Frank Catalanato. You can check out frankcatalanato.com and his book, Heart and Hustle. Want to thank our buddy Jed Weisberger. Of course, I want to thank the good folks here at 1240 AM WGBB and Sports Radio NY. Want to thank our friends at Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, our friends at the CMADS National Podcasting Network. Of course, you can check me out on Twitter at NYBD, Facebook MSilver177, and the website NYBaseballDigest.com. And for the best features, interviews, opinions, and analysis on New York baseball, you know the website. Like I said, one more time, NYBaseballDigest.com. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Take care. We'll be back on Blog Talk Radio next week at 8 o'clock. Till then, see ya.